Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Bricks and Mortar. Today I'm joined by Jen Lehman, a chartered surveyor, an RICS APC assessor and co-founder of Property Elite, a firm providing training and support to APC candidates. As all APC candidates and RICS chartered surveyors will know, professional life is governed by RICS ethical guidance, which is to be found in the organisation's ethical standards and the rules of conduct for firms. They ensure a high benchmark for ethical behaviour and professionalism across the industry. The RICS is currently consulting its members on a new statement of ethical principles and rules of conduct, which, if adopted, will come into force in June 2021. But what's motivated the proposed change? What's in the detail? And what do both members and APC candidates need to be aware of when preparing for final assessment? You're listening to Sarah Jackman. Jen, many thanks indeed for joining me today. We're going to have a look at the new proposals from the RICS, but perhaps we can just start by setting the scene a little bit. When we talk about ethics and professional standards, what are we talking about?
Thanks, Sarah. So acting ethically and professionally, of course, gives our clients and the public confidence in the advice that all of us as surveyors give. And actually, I think really it's just not enough to be competent, skilled and knowledgeable. The RICS sets their ethical requirements and standards and the rules of conduct for members. There's also a separate set for rules of conduct for firms. And then we have the five global professional and ethical standards. There are a couple of additional bits of supporting guidance. There's lots of professional statements that put the detail behind the more general standards, so things like conflicts of interest, countering bribery, and more sector-specific standards such as the Red Book for valuation work.
Okay, so there's a few places where you would find that relevant guidance. Has that been embedded into practice for a number of years now? Just how long has it been around for?
Yeah, of course. So the existing rules of conduct were first published in 2007, and various amendments have been made since. The ethical standards were brought into force in 2009 and were updated to reflect the international ethics standards. And obviously all the time new guidance and professional statements, etc., are being issued. So it's really important for members and APC candidates to keep tabs on the RICS website. There's a good newsletter that the RICS published that have all those changes in them, including the details of the recent consultation. So I'd say keeping tabs on those is a really good way to just make sure that you're acting in line with the most recent and up-to-date standards.
Yeah. So just leading on then to think about APC candidates, at what stage do they need to start getting to grips with ethics and standards?
Yeah, of course. So I think ethics shouldn't be an afterthought and something that you go, oh gosh, I'm doing my documents, I really need to think about what I need to know. So 100% it should be right at the beginning. An APC candidate should be aware that at their interview, an incorrect or unethical response to an ethics question does constitute an automatic fail. So it's actually the most important area that candidates need to be very familiar with. I know that lots of graduates might do a module or have a section on ethics at university, and that'll be built on from their first day in the office during their company induction. So things like company policy on bribes, gifts, hospitality, etc., those all introduce ethics right from the outset. And I think the thing to have in mind for APC candidates at all times is it's that ability to apply what feels right or ethical in situations that feel wrong, and actually being aware of the red flags that might indicate that there's a challenge or an ethical issue at hand. It will help candidates to act in the right way, but also to seek support when faced with challenging situations. And I think that seeking support is really, really important to make sure that candidates are supported, confident and happy, and you know, they know that they have their employer alongside them to help them make the right decisions at the right times.
Yeah, okay. So just thinking then about the APC assessment itself, I mean, to what extent and on a practical level, how can a candidate demonstrate these ethical standards and their knowledge of them when they come up for assessment?
Yeah, of course, there's a couple of ways. So number one, in the written submission, all candidates on every single pathway have to demonstrate level three in ethics, rules of conduct and professionalism. So that means they need 2 to 3 practical examples of acting ethically, giving ethical advice in each of those levels 2 and 3. And I think later on we'll talk about how actually you might demonstrate those through examples. Secondly, candidates must complete the ethics module and test within 12 months of applying for assessment. So that it gives them lots and lots of learning and a multiple choice quiz at the end. They can take it as many times as they wish, which I think actually is a really, really good revision tool and something to do at stages throughout the process. Candidates in the written documents can also demonstrate they're acting ethically by referring to the ethical standards, perhaps in their case study and throughout their other examples and CPD record. When they reach the final assessment stage, so that online interview, they could actually be asked about ethics in terms of the case study, summary of experience, and in the final questioning by their chairperson. So actually, as well as the examples they put in for that ethics competency, they also need to show that they've thought and acted ethically in terms of all the advice they give, everything they write, the way they conduct themselves, the way they communicate. So it is an all-encompassing awareness and ability to show that you are a professional who's able to act with a good moral compass, effectively.
So we touched on examples then. What would be a practical example of someone, you know, demonstrating and highlighting their knowledge of ethics?
Of course. So I had to think about two typical examples that candidates could think about using or which might flag up ideas that they've come across in practice. So something might be like, I acted ethically when a valuation client asked me to advise on signs of structural movement. This was beyond my scope of confidence, so I took responsibility, that being one of the 5 ethical standards, to advise. They sought specialist advice from a structural engineer. So I think the real key when thinking about putting in these ethical examples is to use the wording from the standards. Another example could be, I was offered a bottle of wine by a supplier at a key point during the process of tendering for new work. I was aware it could be perceived as a bribe, so showing appreciation of the Bribery Act. So I politely declined the offer, logged it in our internal register and made my line manager aware. I guess that also shows compliance with company policy, the RICS professional statement, and they could relate that back to promoting trust in the profession and perhaps acting with integrity. Other typically good examples could be conflict of interest checks, anti-money laundering checks, or even if a candidate perhaps makes a minor mistake in a client report, which in practice in however many years does happen, and actually showing how they take responsibility to identify that, advise the client and make sure that things are put right. So there's lots of great examples that if candidates, you know, put the thinking hats on, actually they can demonstrate a very high level of ethical thinking and practice.
The RICS then is currently consulting on new guidance to replace the range of places in which you would find the current standards. What's prompted the change there?
Yeah, so RICS published the Future of the Profession consultation report in January 2019. And effectively, they found that over the years, the market and profession had changed substantially with lots of new challenges, risks and opportunities. We mentioned before that the rules of conduct and ethical standards were published in 2007 and 2009. So the RICS have decided that those need to be brought into the current present day. And that has led to their consultation on the new statement of ethical principles and rules of conduct.
OK, so in terms of the document itself, then, what's contained within it? What are the major changes?
Yeah, of course. So the real focus of the new document is on conduct, competence, diversity, inclusion, support, professional excellence and a risk-based approach. And the real idea is that it's going to be very easy for firms and members to understand and to actually apply and practice. And it basically combines the existing standards and rules of conduct. It introduces 5 new rules for both firms and members. Examples being members and firms must be honest, act with integrity and comply with their professional obligations. Another one of those 5 is members and firms must treat others with respect. And the RICS actually gives some really helpful example behaviours that go behind the standards to help firms and members apply those. So for the second one I mentioned then, treating others with respect, they also relate that to encouraging diversity and inclusion, which personally is absolutely important for the profession to promote. New guidance also puts some professional obligations on members that relate back to the rules of conduct. So there's actually 3 key ones. So CPD, cooperation with RICS, and promptly providing information requested back to RICS.
And so for the industry, do you think if the changes are adopted, will it require a lot of work for firms to ensure that they are compliant, or do many firms have these additional processes in place already?
So as well as those professional obligations for members, the RICS do state what firms will need to do, and actually pretty much all of these will already be being done in practice given the existing requirements. So it's things like having a published complaints handling procedure with an approved redress mechanism and complaints log, having appropriate professional indemnity cover, arrangements if you're a sole practitioner, cooperation with RICS, etc. So I think actually the guidance doesn't require firms to do more, but it should be a very good moment in time for members and firms to take a breath, take stock, and actually review what they do and make sure that it reflects the business risks that they're currently facing and the challenges of the current market. So I think that should, for firms, that should be the real focus of taking this guidance and making it work for, size, risk, and appropriateness to their scope and area of practice.
Yeah. And if it is adopted, when do we expect the changes to come into force? Summer next year, is that right?
Yeah, it's proposed to apply from June 2021. So that's roughly, 6 months time. But I think as we have the draft consultation documents, actually it's worth all firms and members looking through and seeing actually, do I need to think about making any changes and having a form of planning process ready and having that time to take stock before the standards do assumably come into force next year?
So firms then have a bit of time to work on that. What about candidates who are booked in for the spring assessment? What should they be thinking about now just in relation to demonstrating that they're up to speed with that new guidance?
Yeah, of course. I think our spring candidates have the double challenge, obviously, of all the experience they put, their case study, etc., is written in the context of the existing guidance. So 100% they need to know existing guidance inside out. We've also got these new changes. So actually, I think candidates should be making reference to the fact that they're aware of the changes in level one ethics and saying aware that these are coming into force. And actually, as a hot topic, as something in the industry, they may well be asked, maybe particularly at the end, 10 minutes with their chairperson, are you aware of the changes? How might the changes affect you? Talk to me about how those will affect how you work and what you do in practice. So I think actually candidates for the spring need to know about both. And actually that probably does apply for candidates in October and spring the following year, because they'll still have experience under the old guidance. And then they'll have experience coming under the new guidance. And although those examples and actions might be the same, they still need to know the context of the regulations and standards at the time of that experience. So I think it's a bit of extra revision definitely needed.
For candidates currently working towards their spring assessment, what would you say to them now?
I would say do the ethics test. I think that is a very useful way of knowing what the current guidance is. I would also say to them, read cover to cover through the new proposed guidance. There's also a separate consultation document that explains why the changes are being made, and I think that's really useful background for candidates, especially those with perhaps a bit less experience and weren't working in 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010 when the last set of standards came in. And I'd say anybody who's got a view, it's going to affect you for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So give your feedback and be part of the changes that will affect you as a chartered surveyor.
And just for reference, the documents are available via the RICS website, is that right?
Yes, there is. There's, I think it's called the iConsult portal, and you can click through to their login and give as much feedback as you might like to.
Jen, that's been really useful. Thank you ever so much for talking us through the changes.
Thank you, Sarah.
For more information on APC and developing a career in real estate, see the archive of the Bricks and Mortar series at podbean.com and related material at egi.co.uk.